You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Santa-Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I chat with Killian Kaminski. He's the co-founder of the startup Refurbed. Now, for those of you that don't know, Refurbed specializes in, as the name implies, refurbished products. Now, that's digital appliances, home electronics, that kind of thing. Killian chatted with me about his beginnings at Amazon in the refurbishment program, what he took from that, what he learned from it, and also the impact that the circular economy has, whether it's too late when we're talking about environmental impact or if it's just the right amount. We chatted about the way that he sees current entrepreneurs challenging this kind of consumer model, the way they're ingraining impact into their business model, and even the challenges of balancing an impact growth-focused startup with profit, which is essential growth for any startup looking to make their mark and to survive. So I hope you're looking forward to that. But before, a quick message from our sponsor, Vent.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, Killian, and welcome to EU Startups Podcast.
Hi, really nice to be here.
No, it's our pleasure. I'm very excited for this conversation, really, because what you do and who you are, and we'll get to that, but it really leads to a lot of, I think, great questions, kind of moral questions, political questions, economic questions that are just kind of circulating all around the union right now. So with that in mind, I'm going to give you a chance to present yourself, who you are, what you do, and what Refurbed is all about.
Yeah, really happy to do so. So my name is Killian. I'm one of the founders of Refurbed. We are three founders. So I founded the company more than 9 years ago together with my two co-founders, Peter and Jürgen. And we are a refurbished marketplace. So we really want to focus on making consumption more sustainable by enabling consumers across Europe to buying everything from consumer electronic products to household kitchen products, even baby and kids equipment, refurbished and more sustainable. So really changing the way people consuming products and creating an alternative of buying something new. We're already doing this in 11 European markets. We now expanded to 12 additional markets. So we're going really across Europe as a company. And we also just recently announced that we did 3 billion GMV of GMV since founding the company. So over the last 9 years, which I think also showcases that refurbishment and the whole industry is not a niche anymore, but is really going into mainstream. And this is something we're really proud of.
Well, in my prep for this episode, I saw that your co-founder, Peter, he came on to this podcast way back in 2021, I think. So there's three of you, as I understand. So maybe in 3 years, we'll get the third one and we'll complete the set.
Yeah, he's a bit shy. He's our CTO, so he's okay. Trying to stay behind the scene. But if you can convince him, I would love to hear the podcast as well.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. That'd be good. We could just do a special episode where we get all three of them together.
Perfect.
So with that in mind, I think the most important place to start really with these interviews when we're talking about an entrepreneur, when we're talking about a founder, is kind of isolating the moment that your co-founders recognize that there was an issue, and even more so recognize that you could do something about the issue.
I think it was nearly now 10 years ago when I was working for Amazon. My co-founder Peter, he was in the podcast a couple of years ago. He worked at McKinsey as a consultant. I think we have two different sections kind of in our lives. We both studied together, so we knew each other already before that because we studied in Shanghai together. And then mm-hmm. I went to Amazon and worked for the Amazon Marketplace Department, was in charge of the electronic industry, but then also got the task of launching the refurbished program of Amazon in Europe. So that was my first touch point with refurbished products, and I literally fell in love with them because I believe that the combination of refurbished products from the benefits of lower price, they still have a warranty, but they're also doing something really great for the society and the environment with the sustainability impact of these products. It just makes a lot of sense. And at the same time, Peter was at McKinsey and worked for a lot of corporates and probably not always in the mind of changing the world for the better as a consultant in one of the big consultancies. But he loved marketplace business models because he also believed on marketplace business models that they're really combining the benefits of creating a much better value proposition for customers because they get a wide selection of products, they have always the best pricing, and on the other hand also there's a selection process which are the right partners to sell. So as a customer, you already have a verified product group and also seller group that you can buy from. But at this point of time, we kind of also realized that there's not really like a specialized focused marketplace for this product category, specifically in the DACH region. So we sat together and said, let's make sustainability consumption not a niche, but the mainstream. And I think the most interesting aspect of this was at one point when we came up with the idea that normally everything which is more sustainable costs more money. If you're thinking about fair fashion, if you're thinking about sustainable food, et cetera, this is all connected to a higher price for more sustainability. And refurbished products is one of the rare areas where you can save money, but still doing the better decision of consumption. And so this made it so interesting for us to really creating a new market, which enabling that the sustainable choice is the easiest choice. So it's not a niche, it's not complicated, it's not a compromise. It's just a better default for how Europeans buy their products. And this was a starting point.
Well, I dare to say that I think you've answered all of the questions that I have in kind of a really general way, but we're still going to get to the specifics of them. So I guess touching back on the beginning of all of this, I think an interesting point, something that's sure to catch people's ears, eyes really when they're looking over your history, is this Amazon connection. Now, you're leading the refurbishment program there, and Amazon has had its fair share of critique over its impact on the circular economy, on products available being shipped worldwide, and the impact on environmental products, really anything. But so I'm curious to hear about what you brought from that experience, because you're working in a large corporation that's starting to focus on refurbishment. What do you take from that experience into a startup?
Yeah, I mean, I think Amazon is still the biggest e-commerce player on this planet. So of course, it's really about also learning from a company which really understood how to convincing customers of buying something online, which I think looking like 10, 20 years ago was more the niche than the default, and now it really shifted to this direction. So this also allowed me, of course, to have a better understanding how to really optimizing on an e-commerce experience from a customer focus, which of course Amazon also strongly has, but also really to understand how a market-based business model works. The marketplaces always have the complexity that you have this chicken and egg problem, because you have to kind of convince the sellers to provide products and sell the products, but you also have to convince customers to buy from the platform. So you're always staying in between, which is quite complex, specifically at the starting point, where you always have to start off convincing the sellers first to get products and then starting to convince customers of buying these products. But I also really understood the strong quality focus that Amazon normally always have, and so the customer focus as well as the quality focus was something which I would say I took from Amazon and said, like, I want to also copy this to refurb and even doubling down on this. But I also really understood that at Amazon, when I started the business program there, it was just a niche, right? It was not a focus for the whole organization. They are making the majority of their money with selling new products. So it was a side project at Amazon, and there was no strong leadership support behind. I also have to admit that it was really the point that they even wanted to keep the program small because they made more money with selling new products, right? And this was also, I would say, like a depressing moment for me, because when I got the task of making this program big, but didn't got the support, for example, regard of resources from developers, etc., that supporting this pilot, this project, was quite of depressing. And looking at where we are standing right now, I think also from a customer experience perspective, it's really difficult, especially 10 years ago, to explain to a customer what is the difference between a new product, a refurbished product, and a used product. Because people know new products, that's really easy, right? It's something totally new, and they know about a used product. And used products are always connected to, I don't know, they're dirty, there's maybe data from the previous owner on it. So a lot of, I think, question marks that customers have on these product category. And for us, it was really important from the first day on explaining all the products that we are selling, they are not used products. They had been used products when they went into the refurbishment process, which is really complex, really take a lot of effort. So that at the end of this process, which can be up to 40 steps regarding, you know, cleaning the data, exchanging the components, et cetera, that at the end of the process, the product is like a new product. And I think this was also a big learning for me during my Amazon time, that this was often a customer complaint that they didn't understood what they're buying. And when we created Refurbed and started a website which is only focusing on selling refurbished products, the education of customers was much easier for us to do. And I think there we also laid the groundwork for the whole industry, because we invest a lot of money in education of customers. And nowadays, I think many customers are now understanding, in Europe at least, what the difference between new, refurbished, and used is. And this is also a big driver for the growth in the market.
Sure. And what is the process then of convincing people they should be going there? Because I understand the challenge of getting them to even understand what it is. But then from there, you must have the problem of how do you convince somebody to, apart from the cost, which from your material, I've seen 40% cheaper and new is the line I keep seeing, right? That's bound to attract some people automatically because you think, okay, 40% cheaper, great. But if somebody isn't, if that isn't a convincing factor to them, the cost, how do you convince them, and we're talking about Europeans, how do you convince Europeans to kind of buy into the circular economy instead of just buying the new iPhone or buying a new laptop or buying a new blender, whatever it is?
Yeah, it's an absolutely valid question. I would say that when you're looking at the customers in general, the biggest focus is still the price. Which is driving customers because, I mean, also looking over the last couple of years, the inflation was relatively high. People were looking much more on how to spend their money. And of course, if you can save, let's say, up to 40% on a product, when we're talking about a smartphone, for example, we're talking already about a couple of hundred euros, which is quite a lot of money. So I think this is a really important aspect. But then also, it's really strongly about trust. And this is what I meant before when I talked about the key difference to a used product. Because people are kind of questioning, is it really working? Is the quality there? Is it working? So, for example, since we started, we always have a 30 days free return policy, which means every customer who buys a product from us can, you know, try it out, test it for up to 30 days. And if they decide after 29 days that they don't want to have it, they can send it back for free and they get the money back. So this kind of creates a bit of this trust element that people are like, okay, I mean, I will try it out. Let's see if it really works. And that is, I think, the interesting part, because the outcome is that nearly all of the customers which are buying the products are like, wow, this really works, right? And I still remember when we started that customers called us, and of course, we as founders did everything from sales to customer service to finance. And customers called us and told us, hey, I think you accidentally shipped me a new product because, you know, there's no scratch on it. It's functional perfectly. So I guess there was a mistake of yours. And we told them like, no, that is what we promised, right? We told you that you get a like new product, which is perfectly functional and doing something positive for the environment. And this then convinced them and also led really strongly to a strong referral rate. So a really high amount of our customers comes from their friends and family, which referring them and telling them, wow, I had this great experience that I purchased this product. So I think this is a strong driver. And let's say the cherry on the cake is sustainability aspect. Of course, you have also customers which are focusing on sustainability. But I would say that the main driver is price and trust. And then the additional benefit why they love it, this product, and why it's kind of a love product, is that they also do something positive to the environment with a decision of purchasing a product, because in general, consumption will never be sustainable, right? So it's really about how we can make people which want to consume, and I think in the Western world we are living, we always will consume. So how can we enabling customers to consume as sustainable as possible? And in this regard, refurbished products are much more sustainable than new products. And we also have statistics created with some research institutions about the impact on CO2 emissions, electronic waste. And it's a clear, clear sign that it's much more sustainable than buying something new.
So we're talking about environmental impact here, and I've seen the figures, and I don't have them right here, but you know, where I see water saved, e-waste saved, and they're impressive. But my mind always goes to, and we've had other companies here that work in similar verticals. We had the founder of Olio, which I don't know if you know, but it's kind of like selling, unused food from your house and a system that does that. And the question I think that my mind always goes to is, are we making an impact here? If I start dedicating myself completely to a circular economy, right, where are we on that process? Are we on a good track the way you see it? Are we just kind of diminishing returns? And even so, because now refurb's pulling at almost a decade, of existence. Have you seen a positive uptick in the way people view sustainability practices? What's your opinion on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe that there's much more of offers for sustainability consumption now in the market, right? And you touched a couple of examples, right, in the food industry, but also in the fashion industry. There are also now more and more secondhand players, for example, which are getting bigger and bigger. And I think it is really about the education of the consumers that they have to understand what value these products have, right? And this is in the electronic industry, for example, we are active in all of the electronic devices are little mines, right? They have rare elements, they have gold, silver, copper in there, which have quite a high value. And therefore, I think it's also so important to understand that we should not keep this product in our cupboards at home, which, you know, many, many Europeans still have some old smartphones or notebooks in their cupboards, but we have to bring them back into the circle. And that's also why we, for example, as Refurb, we launched a trade-in program where we're now enabling customers to sell back their old smartphones to refurbishers so that they can be refurbished again and having a second life. So I think like the trajectory in Europe is quite positive. There is a development to an understanding where people want to be more sustainable, but it always has to be connected, in my opinion, to also commercial drivers. And what I mean there is, we also as an organization, we are not an NGO, right? We are a company which has to kind of create financial profits. And we are profitable as a company now, but we also want to grow, because the good thing of our business model is as more refurbished products we are selling and as more customers we are convincing of buying refurbished instead of new, as better it is for the planet, but also, of course, for us commercially as a company. And I think we need much more business models. And I personally believe that circular economy is an enabler for that, which combining financial growth and impact growth. So I really strongly advocate for also like personally in my private time, on one hand, on the political agenda in Brussels through activities like lobbying. We are also part of the European Refurbishment Association, which is the largest industry association for refurbished industry. I'm vice chair of the board there, but I also through other activities that I hold, like I'm part of the board of Austrian startups, which kind of builds up the ecosystem for Austrian startups in Austria. And really enabling the new level of entrepreneurship to be more sustainable and thinking about impact business creations. But I also believe that we can convince big companies, big corporates to be more sustainable. And one example in our industry directly is we're working with brands like a Dyson, like an AEG, where we directly have relations with them because they now also wanted to enter the circular economy and not living in the linear economy. And we are the enabler for them to find a customer group which wants to buy these kind of products from them. And I think this is something where we also see us as an enabler for the whole industry to really be more circular and therefore also creating much more circularity in whole Europe.
Well, that was actually my next question. So you've covered it perfectly. But I think it's a challenge there that you're talking of when you're talking about a company, a startup, a scale up that has an impact focus. right? It's all very good, but you have to be able to find a balance between impact and profit, because you have to be able to continue on, right? And if you want to continue making an impact, you have to be able to sell, and you have to be able to do it well, and your business model has to work. So I think that's always an important kind of insight into companies that are focused specifically on that. And what you're talking about here, it just makes me think also about how much of a complaint it is now that, you know, you buy an iPhone and it seems to die in your hands after a year, right? And you're forced to buy the next one. You're forced to buy the next one. And it seems like an endless loop we as a consumer base have just been put inside of. And what you're suggesting here, and it's encouraging to hear that big brands are kind of being involved with that as well, because they are the first to kind of make that change and to make products and to put things forward that have an ability to have a continued life, even after a use and initial use. So I do think that's interesting.
Maybe just one point which I also want to raise here is I think many people always think that there's an either or, right? Like you can be financially successful or you can create an impact. And I personally believe that this is absolutely the wrong perspective. For example, I mean, we treat impact as a product feature. It's not a charity add-on. Because if it is not financially sustainable, it will not scale. And if it doesn't scale, it will not really matter. So the best businesses in this space, I personally believe, are the ones where doing the right thing creates a better customer proposition. And this is what we really want to drive and what we really want to create. And I think we are able to create it. And this will also makes us successfully as a company from an impact perspective, but also attracts a lot of, you know, financial institution and in our regards, and a lot of venture capital companies, which were able to invest. And we also did a larger investment round in autumn last year, which believe that this combination can be extremely successful and also is the future.
And it has been successful. I mean, as we've talked, you've been around now for a decade. We've covered your Series B. In October last year, I covered this. It was $50 million.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, right? Yeah, that you raised. So that's big news. You've expanded across, I think I've seen 7 markets. At that moment, you're announcing expansion to the UK. So now I'm curious about the differences that you've noticed, if any, it could be none, the way refurbishment is tackled kind of country by country or section by section, you know, if we're talking about the DACH region or whatever it is. But I'm interested here if you feel that there's been different attitude in applying these things, or if it's just European-wide, we're all on the same page.
Sadly not. I think there are, of course, strong differences. One clear example is how focused especially regions in Europe are on sustainability. And I think, you know, it's also publicly well aware of this, that the Nordics, for example, have a much stronger sustainability focus than, for example, Eastern Europe, where it's much more price-driven. So we also not expanding into all of the markets, which like a one-to-one approach and everything is the same, but we really have to localize our activities, how we are expanding to new markets, to really understand what the customer groups, what the culture in the specific market we're expanding has about price focus, stability focus, what quality means, what shipping times are required. So overall, I would say motivation varies, right? Some markets lead with climate values, others lead with price and practicality, but the pattern is quite consistent. When refurbished is easy, reliable, and looks premium, then adoption follows everywhere. So people do not want to feel like they are sacrificing to be more sustainable. And this is what I kind of always try to repeat, right? The advantages, if you can be more sustainable, getting a perfect product and you save money is just a logical choice. And if you're able to convince customers on exactly this, then it normally always led to a successful growth in the market, because the biggest, I would say, of the biggest benefit that you can have and the biggest success for as a company if you do not have to pay for customers to come to you through marketing activities, but if they directly refer you to their friends and family because they love the experience, then, I mean, first of all, it makes you much more successful because it's cheaper, but it also really creates that a much more trust level, because if your friends and family tells you that it's amazing what you can buy there or that refurbed works, you will trust this much more than if there is a advertisement online or there's a TV advertisement from the company itself. And so I think this is really the important success factor that we had from the beginning and how we're also trying to address every market launch that we are tackling to expand our customer group.
Well, you know, speaking of customer groups, all of our laptops here at U-Startups are from Refurb. I don't know if you know this, but they
not
all
yet,
are.
I'm really happy to hear.
Yeah. Whenever one kind of, you know, breathes its final breath, it's like, all right, we're going to order a new one from Refurb. So far, the one I'm on right now is as
perfect.
Well.
So you can even do like really professional podcasts with our refurbished
Exactly.
devices.
Yes. Look at this. So we're fans, of course, here. And I guess turning the page a little bit, because on top of being a founder and everything, you're also a board member of Austrian Startups, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of involvement must give you insight into seeing how a new generation of founders, new generation entrepreneurs are kind of tackling the idea of not just a circular economy, but environmental impact. I was wondering what kind of insights you've had from your involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say like many founders start with impact baked into the business model so that from the start, not just adding it later, because there is a clear, I would say like drive in the industry for it. But I also, what I see is specifically that they often now think much more globally from day one and build always with trust in mind earlier, which I think like historically, specifically looking at Austrian companies, they often, for them, you know, growth and the long-term expansion strategy was, we want to go to the DACH region. I think now they're starting to think already on a DACH level from the start or even European level and then kind of try to think globally. Because they understand now that growth is much more than just one country where they're active in. So I would say that this is a strong driver, but I also, what I see is that they also understand and be more realistic that impact needs unit economics to survive. So it's not just, you know, creating a company with a hope that at one point someone will love it, but it has to also create revenues. And when I look back to 10 years ago when we founded the company, it was also the time of venture capital where it's just about growth, right? Profitability, at one point it will come, but no one cared about it. And there is a clear shift in the market now, right, regarding you have to create a company which as fast as possible creates profitability and is profitable, but also you want to show the growth. And I mean, I understand this. I think it's a perfect world if as a venture capital company, I would ask the company grow by 100%, but also be profitable. You know, it's great. It's not always that easy, I think, as a founder to make this happen. But I also believe that there are now much more realistic business models created. And we see a strong entrepreneurship drive everywhere. I mean, of course, AI is the topic now where everyone talks about and everyone invests as well in. But I also believe that, for example, we are not from a founding of the company an AI company, but we are now implementing in many, many different areas of the company, probably kind of all areas of the company, AI in our daily operations, the processes and how we are operating, which makes us much more efficient. It also helps us to be more profitable because we can be much more customer focused, much more efficient as an organization through the support of AI. As an enabler for growth and also, for example, the expansion to now 12 European markets is, of course, also driven by the development in AI, which enables us, for example, increasing translations, make it easier for customer service activities in different languages. And this is, I think, something where people are now starting to be much more active in, and entrepreneurship now also means you can do much more in a smaller group of people where historically you needed 20 experts in all different fields,
right?
Which I think is really interesting for a new level and a new wave of entrepreneurship going forward.
And is there a focus on, and this might be a little bit early, but you know, there's already discussions about the environmental impact of AI, you know, with data centers, these kinds of things. So is there that kind of element that is also being considered when we're talking about a company like Refurb that is so focused on impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fast sustainability, are we also really living our sustainable mission that we're having? That also means we're reporting every year with a sustainability report, which kind of explains how more sustainable we are, what are the impact that we're creating, what is also our, you know, energy consumption and so on and so on. And I totally think it's really important to be really transparent about the impact that, for example, AI still creates the data centers, et cetera. And we had this one example because we, I think a couple of months ago, launched our first AI TV spot. So just AI produced TV spot with our new brand ambassador, Björn, who is an ice bear and kind of represents a bit of the topic of climate change and how we have to think about sustainability. And we also had internal, the question of our teams asking, you know, if we're now creating an AI TV advertisement, is it really sustainable and not like, you know, producing it ourselves? But then if you would compare that, producing a TV spot normally means you have to travel with a team to a destination where you're producing it there. It's travel involved, it's material involved. In the end, it's much, much less sustainable, impactful or harming to do an AI TV spot than to do the classic production that you had in the past. And this was also really eye-opening for our teams when we transparently shared this, because of course, I think it's something totally new where the majority of people, for them, it's something new, something to learn new, it's something to understand how it works. So we also want to enabling our teams to understand how to be careful about AI usage in this regard, like not doing anything, just unnecessary stuff, because this has a negative impact, of course, on the environment. But on the other hand, if you use it for the right tools, it can create a much, much bigger impact on the positive environmental side. For example, if we are now enabling, I think we're going to more than 450 million customers from a reach with our expansion that we're now doing. And if there are more customers would now choosing refurbished instead of new, this automatically creates, of course, a much, much more positive impact on the environment than the usage of our AI tools, for example, for translations. So I think this is always, it has to be comparable and you have to be transparent to ensure that you also stay true to your mission and to the culture that you have as an organization.
Yeah, in the previous episode, I chatted with the founder of Cognigy and they do agentic AI for customer service, right? And he shaped it as the moral question of our time. And I thought that was a good way of saying it. Because AI expands into everything now. And whereas somebody might say, well, what could Refurbed even have to offer on AI? How could that even impact their business model? It can't. And I think it's very encouraging to hear that you're kind of taking that same approach that you've taken with physical products and you're applying it to AI, which I think is just kind of goes on with the ethos of what Refurbed is all about. So with that in mind, I want to wrap up the interview with a last question here, and I'll let you get back to saving the planet. I'm interested in kind of hearing what you think needs to happen if we're talking culturally, if we're talking politically, economically, at a European level for refurbished products to kind of take center stage and for it to be the you know, people will always want something new. That you'll never be able to erase that, of course. But for refurbished products to really take a center stage when we're talking about this topic.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of development in the right direction. But I think looking at the two topics, culturally and politically, like individually, I think on culturally, on the cultural topic, we have to stop equating like new and better. Like a new condition doesn't mean it is better. Refurbished can be also better. So it's really about starting to valuing much more longevity. And we have to understand the value of the devices that we have. And I mean, no smartphone is designed for 2 years of usage cycle, right? Like, of course, there are some, this is on the political side, requirements at one point when there are no software updates anymore. After 5 or 7 years, you have to replace it. But right now, what we also see, so many customers are now buying a generation -2, -3. So not the newest model, but something which is maybe like 2 or 3 years old, because the technical functionality is kind of nearly as good as a new product, or as the newest models, right? There's not such a big difference anymore that you really require to upgrade all the time. So I think this is culturally really important to understand the value of the devices we have and think about longevity. And on the political side, I think it's really about stronger right to repair, longer software support, for example, to extending the lifetime of these products. But also, I believe there's a huge potential in smarter VAT rules for circular products. I mean, if you already have paid VAT on a new product, why you have to pay the same kind of VAT on a refurbished product, right, which is already paid once? And I think this also would enabling much more consumers to be even more interested in buying refurbished products because it has a price advantage. And also on a European level, I think it's connected to the political agenda. We want to be more circular. So why not supporting it in this regard? But also, you know, procurement in general, public procurement could be much more focused on circularity. What is the best value for products, for example, how we can do this? And if convenience and trusts are there, then the default will change faster than people expect. So I think this is the main element that we have to create. And we as a company try to exactly build this up, this trust element that people understand it's is as good as new, but even better because it's more sustainable. And it's really convenient to use. And if we're creating this, then I think the change will happen. And on the political side, I think everything which is currently discussed has really to be implemented with a circularity mindset. And not creating loopholes for the big manufacturers to sticking with a linear economy. And I personally believe in Europe, we have a huge potential to be the forerunners globally for circular economy, because this would be like one of the rare elements where we would, as Europe, be still the leader in the world, where we lost a lot of the races in other areas. So I really try to be vocal in this regard, but also being active in this regard to ensure that we will be the winning party in Europe and to promote circular economy and having this as our big success factor in the industry.
Well, that's an interesting element, isn't it? Because you hear so much now about buy from EU, these kinds of movements now, right? But it seems to be beyond that. And I agree with what you're saying here. Beyond that, not just buy from EU, but make sure that what you're buying from EU can have a longer lifespan and enter into a circular economy, which is really its own podcast. I think we could get into a whole that, but
maybe just one last point on this one. I think we're also talking, and specifically with everything happens around the globe right now, which is of course totally insane. We want to use the lose dependency outside of Europe, right? And when we're talking about the products we are working with, which are electronic products, they are none of them is produced in Europe or is totally made in Europe. So we all need all of the resources from kind of everywhere but Europe. So it's really about if we want to lose dependency from other countries, the products that we already have here, if we use them and extending the lifetime, we automatically reducing the dependency. So I think there's a huge potential also from independence, but also security for us in Europe if we double down on the circular economy, because we would use products that are already there, and it's just like the smarter choice for everyone politically, but also I think on every personal life to do this. And therefore, I hope that this is something which the future holds for all of us and makes it the new normal and the normality that we really rethink new, which is our slogan, and believe that refurbishment is the future.
Well, thank you very much, Killian. It's been a pleasure to have you on. As I say, I think we would talk about this all day. There's so many different kind of angles to take on this. But I'm going to stick to 30 minutes. I told your comms people I would have you for. So that's going to be it. So thank you very much.
It was a big pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for the invite.
Yes, hopefully we'll chat soon again.